During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Second half of the program begins right now. Around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. That is what we do. We call it the two-minute drill. We do it every Monday and Friday. Coming up here shortly, we'll talk some Chiefs football with Adam Teicher, our Chiefs insider from ESPN.com is the Adam Teicher, covering the Kansas City Chiefs since 1990. Chiefs and Texans. Chiefs a 4.5-point favorite coming into this game, but a lot of NFL to talk, some Major League Baseball to talk. So we head out with the two-minute drill around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people where the stories are happening when their phone doesn't drop. That's what we do. We do it right here. It's live radio, people. This is how it works, okay? This is how it works. Let's go to Washington, D.C. to get things started. Chris Russell, 106.7 The Fan is there. Chris, how are you, sir?
Hey, Soren, how are you? Sorry about the little phone droppage there.
Life happens. It's an imperfect world. We're just glad to talk to you. And I'm glad the Nationals are still firing. I think this might be the first year that I didn't. I'll have to go back and look at our baseball predictions that I didn't pick the Nationals, but maybe I did. No, you know what? I think I did. I've been trying to get the Nationals into the World Series for like the last 5 or 6 years. Was getting rid of Bryce Harper what they needed to actually finally advance?
You know, it's funny because, I mean, you would have never predicted that they would be a better team, a much better team from last year to this year without Bryce Harper, and being that they started off so miserably at 19-31, where they just did everything to run wrong. Everything. I mean, they couldn't do a thing like nothing. And, you know, here they are. So to answer your question, yeah, they're a better baseball team. They're a better organization. And it's not because Bryce was a bad guy. It's not because he was a horrible teammate. I mean, some guys liked him. Some guys didn't. The fan base often liked him, but they were often annoyed by him. Nobody was that upset to see him leave. Everybody just conditioned themselves that he was going to leave. I think the thing that only upset people around here was that he went to the Philadelphia Phillies. That being said, the Phillies are home. They fired their manager, and the Nationals are here. Again, nobody would have predicted this in late May. It's truly an amazing turnaround. But I'd be lying to you if I said the culture and the atmosphere and the locker room and the clubhouse and the dugout and everything feels and seems and looks more clutch and better and looser without Bryce Harper.
Yeah, it does. And there's a lot of, listen, he's a great player. There's no doubt, or at least maybe a great hitter. I don't know how people want to differentiate from that, but there is a lot of drama that comes with them. And I am curious though, you know, not to, you're trying to win a World Series. I know that's a focus for everyone here, but what is the feeling? And maybe this is contributing to why they took off. Strasburg's got an opt-out, and Scott Boras is his agent. Anthony Rendon is due a big deal. There are reports, what, 7 for $210 million is on the table from the Nationals.
Right.
I'm curious because I think if it is like the last hurrah, maybe that brings everybody together for some great playoff push. What do you think about whether or not Strasburg and or Rendon will be back next year with this club?
Yeah, I think Strasburg will be. I do not think Anthony Rendon will be, just because I don't even know if Strasburg's definitely going to opt out. I expect him to, but the Nationals have always put a high priority, a much higher priority on the starting pitching, more than the everyday player, as good as Anthony Rendon is. You mentioned the 7 years, $210 million, some of that. About 50% was reportedly deferred without interest over a 15-year span, so that really reduces that money. It's way, 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 way behind in total value to Nolan Arenado's 8-year, $260 million deal. And while I don't think anybody would really argue that Rendon is better than Arenado, you know, I just don't think it was a fair offer from the Nationals, and I don't believe in low-ball first offers with the room to improve, because when you have a guy like Scott Boras and certain guys, certain personalities, they take that as an insult. They take that as, you know, a slap in the face and, like, you don't want me. And then they start thinking differently. So, again, I'll say this. I think Strasburg will be back, whether he opts out or not. Even if he opts out, I think they'll find a way to keep him. And I think Rendon is gone, and Rendon could go, geez, he could go anywhere. He could go to Texas. He could go, I guess, to L.A. At Dodgers, you know, who couldn't beat the Nationals. He could go inside the division to any one of three teams, the Phillies, the Mets, and the Braves, all potentially and do have needs at third base.
All right, great football game coming up this weekend. It's going to make one of my screens. Redskins-Dolphins, the battle for the number one pick. Will each team just, you know, look more like a volleyball match as they each try to hit the ball over to the other team and give them the chance to score to try and get the number one overall pick? How will this game play out? I'll ask you about the next head coach in a minute, but how will the game play out this Sunday?
I'm hoping it's -3 to -3 in the end. Does that work for you?
It does. I would love a tie. I'd love a 0-0 tie.
Well, I'm even going sub-0. So that's how bad and putrid these two teams are. The difference is, the Dolphins, right, they're trying to do this on purpose. The Redskins are trying to win and have been trying to win. And their stupid general manager and president for the last 10 years who couldn't manage his way out of a box, never mind manage a team to the playoffs, consistently said they're close. They were close. And the culture is great. And everybody works hard and wants to win. Really? That's culture? Because teams and personnel want to win? And because they show up for work when they're handsomely paid? Really? Is that how we judge culture? Go ask Andy Reid what he thinks of culture and what the definition. Go ask Bill Belichick what the definition of culture is. I guarantee you, it isn't just showing up to work and wanting to win. I guarantee it's a lot more than that. So these two teams absolutely suck. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I guess the Redskins have more talent on paper only because, again, they've been trying to win. I think the Redskins will somehow, some way, find a way to win this game. I expect it to be in the 16-13 17-14 type variety.
Mike Tomlin, Todd Bowles, and Eric Bieniemy, the names that were put out there by Ed Werder. He was quoting someone close to Daniel Snyder. So I take it to be absolute gospel because everything we've ever heard about the Redskins ended up being true. So listen, if you really want to make it hard to get a coach who's already got a job, let everyone know you've got interest in him. Right, because if the Steelers were gonna fire Tomlin, which I don't think they will, they sure as hell aren't now. They're gonna make you give up draft pick compensation. So, who does your gut tell you will be the head coach of the Redskins next year?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be either of those guys. Tomlin obviously has some connections. His son plays at Maryland. You know, it's from the area. All that I could see that being a fit. Washington D.C. I think would. You know, has a spot in their heart for a guy like a hard-nosed type guy like Tomlin is perceived to be. I think the two names to watch out for is Kevin O'Connell, the first-year offensive coordinator, former NFL quarterback, 34-year-old. They do not want to lose him. They do not want to see him exit out the door like Sean McVay did, and they fired Matt LaFleur now with the Packers, and of course, Kyle Shanahan. So I think that's going to be a very legitimate possibility. And then the other name that, you know, I guess you can't disqualify, not just because he said he would want the job, which people actually have to want this job. And there aren't many that would want this job if they have another choice, is Rex Ryan. I wouldn't throw his name out. Callahan worked for him with the Jets. His brother is on the staff. Rex Ryan desperately wants to be a head coach again. I could see the Redskins being hoodwinked by a personality, a loud, blubbery, type of guy like Rex Ryan, especially with some of the pieces already on the staff in place.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, no doubt. All right, Chris Russell in D.C., great stuff. Appreciate it, man. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks, pal. You too.
St. Louis. Chatting it up with Scotty Warman, Fox Sports Midwest in St. Louis, Missouri. Scotty, how are you, sir?
Doing good, Petro. How are you?
Doing really good. Real quick on the Blues before we get to the Cardinals side of the sure. NLCS. Three straight comeback wins. Usually, like, there's like a hangover the next year. Like, they still have the magic. What's going on?
Well, I think they're probably still a little bit on the high from last June and carrying over to the raising of the banner last Wednesday at the Enterprise Center here in St. Louis. I know the president of hockey operations, the general manager, Doug Armstrong, said normally a team will probably the first month, maybe a little bit later than that, Petro, carry that momentum into the year, and then they kind of hit a lull after all the excitement and the highs and all that stuff finally kind of dissipate, if you will. He's a little bit more concerned once you get into November and December. We'll see what transpires. I think the one thing, Petro, about this team is the fact that you only lost a couple of guys. In fact, one, you lost to upgrade your defense, and you lost Pat Maroon, the local kid who went down to Tampa. But other than that, you've got the same crew back, and you've got a team that has a lot of depth. And some of the other guys that didn't really get a chance to play regularly last year are getting a chance, I should say one or two guys, because of some injuries to some of their regulars. So I think depth is one thing that I think can really play a role once maybe they go through it. I mean, it's just, you know, whether it's NBA, NHL, or Major League Baseball, we know that these are marathons. So you're going to have lulls in a season. You just can't play 600-700 baseball or hockey or basketball. But I think depth is a huge part of this team, and that you have basically the whole team back for another year. But, yeah, it's been off to a really nice start for the first week and a half of the season.
All right, let's talk about the Cardinals and Nationals. First of all, how surprised are you that the Cardinals are here?
Honestly, I think there's a lot of people surprised, to be quite honest with you, Petro. I think the Cardinals and people here had really high hopes at the beginning of the season. The start of the season probably didn't go the way that they had anticipated. Second half was a very strong, for the most part, a strong second half. There was maybe a little concern that once you wrapped up the season and kind of looked at it, that, you know, through 5 months of the season, your bullpen was one of the best, at least in the National League, and they had an inflated ERA. Guys were used a lot and maybe running out of gas. So that was maybe a small concern once you headed into the playoffs. I think once you won the division and you had that opportunity at least to take on Atlanta, I think people here thought that there was a chance that you could beat a very talented Braves team. I think in the NLCS, you thought you were going to be in Los Angeles today. So when you're at home and you're taking on the Nationals, and I'm not disrespecting the Nationals because I think they're a heck of a team, a lot of talent, especially when you look at that top three of that starting rotation. But still, you're like, you have home field advantage now, A, and where the Cardinals have been very good, and B, you're not taking on the creme de la creme. So I think a little surprised, but I think there's a lot of excitement, obviously, now in St. Louis because this team is back in the NLCS and, you know, maybe has a chance to make it to the Fall Classic again. I don't think, honestly, Petro, if you went back, especially into May, that there was a lot of people in Cardinal Nation and Cardinal fans that really thought that this was going to be a team that was going to make it all the way to the Fall Classic. But, you know, they're four wins away from getting back there.
All right. Tell me about a non-sellout on Monday. First time in 36 postseason games played at Busch 3. One of them didn't sell out. And as of yesterday, tickets for the first two games of the NLCS on Friday and Saturday, today and tomorrow, were still available. What's going on?
I think it's a great question. And I wish I could sit here and honestly tell you an answer. I was surprised when I found out. I ran into one of the Cardinals executives on Sunday at the game, and he told me that there were still tickets remaining for Monday's game. I don't remember in my lifetime. In fact, it's funny, I just had a conversation with my mom, who remembers especially the three teams that went to the World Series here in St. Louis in the 60s, because I asked her, I said, Mom, was there any time in those teams in the 60s where they didn't have sellouts, whether it was the old Sportsman's Park or Busch Stadium 2? And she said no. And I don't remember that even in the 80s when I was growing up here, much less, like you said, in Busch Stadium 3. It's an interesting dynamic. People even here, and you know about this, Petro, will talk about the strong backing of Cardinal baseball. I was surprised, honestly, that there were seats that were not filled for that game four. And I don't know if maybe because of this tough loss, you didn't have a walk-up crowd for that game on Monday. But normally when you have a playoff game here in St. Louis, that puppy's sold out. It's like guaranteed. I would imagine even with the cold temperatures that now that we all have here in the Midwest, it is clearing up. The rain has finally stopped, so I think we'll start the game on time. I would imagine now that you get a walk-up and a sellout, but I'm shocked that, you know, we're even talking about questionable that even 24 hours before game one of the NLCS that, you know, St. Louis still has some tickets remaining for that game.
Who wins? What do you think? Do you like the matchup for the Cardinals?
I do, and here's why. I think we're going to have a lengthy series. I think Washington's a heck of a team. I think there's a couple of things that take into effect. First of all, if things continue like from the first series into this series, when you have Ozuna and Goldschmidt going for the Cardinals, that kind of lessens the load for the rest of the lineup. And if you can start getting some guys on and these guys are starting to clear the bases and starting to hit like they should, Ozuna and Goldschmidt, I think that proves to be an advantage for the Cardinals. And again, a very good lineup for the Nationals. The other one that sticks out to me, Petro, is the fact that how it sets up where you do have home field advantage. And again, I'm not saying when you think of Strasburg, Scherzer, and Patrick Corbin, that's an unbelievable trio when you have a starting rotation. But Adam Wainwright, and we saw it on Sunday. I don't know if you saw the game, Petro. He was dynamite. And he is like old Waino without the mid-90 fastball. He's like the old Wainwright that we saw through, you know, the better part of his career at home. On the road, not as much. But at home, he's incredible. And he's been like that all season long. He's going to be 38 years old. So he gets two home starts if you get game two and then you get to game six. I think that's a positive. The other one is you got Jack Flaherty, who by far has been the best starter in all of Major League Baseball since after the All-Star break. There's not even a question about that. And you have him on game three and game seven. So the longer this series goes, I think it puts more of an advantage, especially from a pitching aspect, for the Cardinals. I'm going to take the Cardinals in seven games. I think it'll be a great series. I think the Cardinals, especially in the back end of this series, with Waino going on home in game six and Flaherty in a potential game seven, gives the Redbirds an advantage.
Scotty Warman in St. Louis. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, Petro. Thanks, buddy.
To the arms of Florida.
And Ryan Green, 1010 XL in Jacksonville, Florida. Ryan, how are you, sir?
So, Ryan, I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Pretty good. All right. Shad Khan and Jalen Ramsey, heart to heart. Is it all done? He's going to play this weekend. You believe that?
Well, he's listed as questionable on the injury report, Saran. It's interesting. When Shad Khan came out and had the heart to heart, and that was released to the media, that interview he did there on the Wall Street area in New York City, about 10 minutes later, Josina Anderson of ESPN, almost like it was planned, said that Jalen Ramsey's going to still listen to his body. His stance still hasn't changed. So it's a full-blown soap opera. The bottom line is, what's factual, is that for the first time in really 2 weeks, Jalen Ramsey's been on the practice field. He's practiced three times this week, and we'll see what happens. I think this is the first time, clearly, since the Tennessee game on the NFL Network about a month ago, that he may play in the game. But the further this thing goes, the more interesting it gets, because the Jaguars, Seren, they're not trading him. And Jalen Ramsey, I guess the sooner he understands that, the better off he's going to be.
Yeah, all right. Do they have a chance to, maybe sign a quarterback in Nick Foles and then turn away from him? Is Minshew making such an impression that even when Foles is healthy, Minshew will be the guy?
Well, he just won the fourth Rookie of the Week award. I mean, there have only been 5 weeks of the regular season, and Gardner Minshew's got four Rookie of the Week awards. I mean, the guy would be the Rookie of the Year in the NFL right now. It's incredible what Gardner Minshew has done. Now, unfortunately, the defense let him down a little bit last week in their loss to Carolina. But you're talking 9 touchdowns to 1 interception. You're talking, 1,200 yards through the air for this sixth-round rookie that has looked far superior than the likes of Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins have looked. They're all taken in round one. And then you pay Nick Foles $88 million in the offseason. He's scheduled to come back in about a month. I will be fascinated to see what happens. If the Jaguars can somehow beat New Orleans on Sunday, which will be a tall order, they have back-to-back games against the Bengals and the Jets, who have won as many games this year, Seren, as you and I have. And that's zero. And if the Jaguars get to 5-3 or even 4-4, I would be very curious to see what would happen moving forward when Nick Foles is ready to come back.
Yeah, it's very interesting. All right, let's talk about Florida, 13.5 point dog to LSU. They beat Auburn, and they seem to get no respect going to LSU. You like that number? Is that accurate?
Yeah, the 13.5 is ridiculous. Look, I don't know if Florida's going to win the game, but for them to be a two-touchdown underdog is ridiculous. And it's interesting, there's usually a lot of talk coming out of the Florida locker room when it's LSU week. They haven't said a whole lot this week. LSU is actually the ones that have been talking about we hate them, we remember what they did last year. So a lot of chatter out of Baton Rouge, not so much in Gainesville. Look, to me, this is going to be a great game, a game that's a prove-it game for Florida. Everybody talks about Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. Everybody was talking about Auburn before last week. Well, you got those people quiet. If you go to Baton Rouge and you beat LSU after you beat Auburn, then all of a sudden Florida is on the national radar. But, Seren, you know as well as I do how hard it is to win a night game in Baton Rouge. So it's a tall order. But for anybody that's interested, I would absolutely take Florida and the 13. That line to me is a joke.
Yeah, I'm on Florida in the 13. I hope you're right. Ryan Green in Jacksonville. Great stuff, buddy. Always appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Hey, man. Have a great weekend, Seren. Thank you, pal.
And Adam Wexler, NBC Channel 2 in Houston, Texas, is next. Adam, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
As well as the Astros flying high, getting the big Game 5 clincher, and headed on to face the New York Yankees. First of all, how much concern was there going into Game 5 after Verlander didn't get it done in 4?
Elimination games are dangerous, and everybody knows that. The National League Championship or Division Series obviously showed that, because you just never know what's going to happen. And so avoiding them at all costs is the only way to ensure that you're going to get where you want to go when you're a team that won 107 games. So there was definitely some concern, but what the stuff you say before the games and what plays out on paper, you hope it happens in a game. And that's honestly exactly what did happen for the Astros. They got to come back home. They were the best home team in baseball all year, and they're now 3-0 at home in the postseason. And they sent the best pitcher in baseball out there and hoped he would be that, and that's exactly what Gerrit Cole was. So when those things play out, they got those early runs, and he kind of put them on cruise control after that. So the game itself, there were no nerves. Leading up to the game, plenty.
Biggest free agent on the market is going to be Cole. I know there's a lot to be done in ALCS, possibly a World Series as well before you get to that point. But what is your gut feeling tell you? Is Gerrit Cole going to be an Astro moving forward?
Well, I'll tell you, yesterday's game from that standpoint was particularly important. I think moving forward, even if he doesn't repeat that in the championship series or in, you know, whatever the 2, 3, 4 more starts he has in the postseason, because he pitched in an elimination game and absolutely dominated, that was pretty much the last thing he had to do to ensure that he's basically going to demand the largest contract that's ever been handed out by a pitcher. Scott Boras is his agent. The Astros are in a good position in that there are only a handful of teams that should even be on the phone with his agent, and they're one of them. Presumably, the Dodgers and Angels are among that group. There's maybe one other team, probably on the East Coast, probably plays in the AL East, probably goes to the playoffs every year. Not sure who that might be. But they're going to do what they can. It's just so interesting because they added Zach Greinke at the deadline to win a World Series, but he makes so much money. You already have the deal with Verlander for the next couple of years. They'd be committing $90 million or more to 3 pitchers for at least the next 2 seasons. That is a tremendous amount of money tied up in a very small percentage of your team.
Yeah, I think the Greinke move was made to, one, push this year, but also expecting to lose Gerrit Cole. I'm very disappointed the Royals weren't mentioned in the mix for Gerrit Cole. But,
oh, wait, I meant to say there's going to be a mystery team. There'll be a mystery team.
Mystery team leaves every other fan base going, oh, I think he means me. Yeah, I like that.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in China. I've heard the national fodder, right? I've seen the politicians commenting. What's the fallout in Houston with the comments that were made? And you know, to the credit or maybe discredit, it probably depends on where you are politically, of the commissioner, standing his ground and saying, hey, we have a right to our opinions. What's the fallout, though, in Houston, Texas?
honestly, with where the team was at the time, they've been there. They've just spent 2 weeks away from camp. There's been no activity here. They were in Honolulu, then they were in Japan for two games in Tokyo. They still have yet to return and do anything here in town. So it's actually not been maybe as fiery as it could have been, and where it certainly has been elsewhere. And the fact that there were games going on in China, and the fact that Adam Silver has spoken about it. So I think it's still much more on a league level than it is on a Houston or even an individual team level. But this is a story, and obviously one worth following from the league. And it really, we know what it has to do with. It's a major issue. It's a much bigger issue than a professional sports league. But as they get closer to the regular season now, it's a little over a week away. I'm sure there will be more to say about it.
Yeah. All right. Texans, let's save the best for last, at least from our view here. Texans getting 4.5 coming to Kansas City. This line was 7.5, 8. When it opened, I think largely the Chiefs' performance on Sunday night and the injuries piling up for the Chiefs drove that line down as much as maybe Houston did their part. Or am I wrong? Are the Texans ready to come in and take care of business in Arrowhead the way the Colts did?
They probably don't quite have the same setup to do so. I mean, the Colts wanted to dominate the ball. They ran the ball tremendously well with Mac, and obviously the injuries were, I think, a big part of it. Not only the guys that were already missing, but when 15 is hobbled, that's certainly going to change some of the things because he's so creative and so capable of creating opportunities on plays that just aren't supposed to be there. But that's what the Texans have in their quarterback as well. I think the Texans are well-equipped from a talent standpoint to stay on the field with the Chiefs, to potentially beat the Chiefs because they are so explosive offensively, and they finally showed it. I think they knew it all along going into this year that they should be explosive, they could be explosive, but now that they've done that, keep in mind they just put 53 points on the Falcons at home, but the previous two home games, they scored a grand total of 25 points. They were just flat out awful at home for some reason. And maybe this is the kind of confidence they need. Biggest game of the year on their schedule so far, having played at New Orleans to open the season from a hostile environment and a noise environment. I think that actually will have them pretty well prepared for what they're going to see at Arrowhead. And this could very well turn out to be a huge game for the future of this season. And something we talked about a whole bunch this week is, you know, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady would play each other every single year because they were always winning their divisions. And these were the matchups that everybody looked forward to kind of league-wide. These two guys, Watson and Mahomes, same draft class, kind of their ascent at the same point in time. Yeah. Kansas City sure looks locked in to win the division for many number of years to come. And if the Texans can elevate past the Colts, then this is something that fans will get treated to years and years to come.
By the way, real quick, is Bill O'Brien comfortable there? The odds makers always want to make him about the third or fourth favorite to be fired. As far as the first coach to be fired, Jay Gruden was the overwhelming favorite this year, and that bet's now come off the board. But where is O'Brien's security there long-term with the Texans?
It's probably pretty good, considering he's the only head coach in the league that also is the general manager of his team that doesn't have one. He's been given more and more power every single year without doing anything all that great following any regular season. They've won the division several times. They haven't done anything in the playoffs any times. And that's what shouldn't give you job security, but for some reason here it has. And honestly, they've played so well, they look like they're on the come, but they could easily return to Houston after Sunday as a 3-3 football team. All of a sudden, you're back at 500. You're kind of starting to look at the window of, well, we have Deshaun Watson, we still have J.J. Watt, there's DeAndre Hopkins. When's the big winning coming? It really needs to start this season. This season has to be the best season they've ever had under Bill O'Brien in the postseason. If it isn't, then maybe those rumblings will come. But he's not going anywhere, at least for, something drastic, in my opinion, would have to happen for that to his name to be real on that list of coaches first to go.
Adam Wexler, NBC Channel 2 in Houston. You're the man. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Appreciate it.
That's right. It's a Football Friday. That means it's time to talk to our man, Adam Teicher. Our Chiefs insider joins us here in the program, brought to you in part by our friends at E. Edwards Workwear. It's cold. That means it's time to get to E. Edwards Workwear if you don't have a great Carhartt jacket ready to work and play outside. Best looking, best built jacket around. Get it at E. Edwards Workwear. Find them online at eeworkwear.com. Adam, welcome to the Sprint Guest Line, my friend. How are you?
Good, Trent. How are you doing today?
Not bad. Are we going to see Tyreek Hill play?
I'm thinking we will. I think he's going to go on Sunday. You know, the Chiefs obviously have, you know, another few hours to make that decision. But I think he's going to play on Sunday. That's kind of been the MO, is to give a guy, an injured guy, a couple weeks to get back. Now, his is, you know, he returned to practice last week, so this would kind of fit the pattern. Now, his was kind of a different injury that was kind of tricky. So, you know, I guess we'll know the final thing before kickoff. But I think right now that's kind of the plan, that he would play.
Do you have a – did we learn of a new NFL injury listing of good today in the conversation?
Yeah. He's the first guy to be G on the injury report. So, you know, Andy Reid obviously didn't want to answer that question, but you know, they want to take this down to the end as far as the Texans are concerned. So he was being a little evasive today, but you know, that's all part of the game.
All right, a lot was made, and rightfully so, of the Colts playing 50% more man-to-man defense than they had ever under Eberflus last week, and how that was maybe one of the big keys for them. A lot of numbers have been out there, a lot of metrics about how more effective they are, the Chiefs are, with Tyreek Hill against man-to-man defense. Is that it? Is it as simple as Tyreek Hill's back, or are we just – is it because Tyreek Hill hadn't really missed any time before now, and we finally saw a team try this, and maybe Tyreek Hill's not the get-out-of-jail-free card that everybody thinks he's going to be?
No, I think there's a lot of things happening here. You know, I don't think the you know, Tyreek Hill – hey, he makes a difference, but I don't think he in and of itself is going to be the magic bullet. You know, they need to protect the quarterback better. I mean, that wasn't very good, or hasn't been good at times this year, and they need to do a better job. You know, he needs to do a better job. You know, he's been hurt, but there's been some inaccuracy the last couple weeks. And, you know, I think we've kind of, because he's been practicing and playing, we've kind of blown off to some extent the Pat Mahomes ankle injury and just kind of said, it's nothing. But he's been on the injury report every week. I think there is something to that. You know, he needs to play a little better as well. And, you know, I don't think – my sense is this issue with the man coverage. I mean, the Chiefs know how to play against man coverage. They've done it before. You know, I think they'll be okay against man coverage, just like they would against zone. I mean, they'll be okay. I mean, they know how to do these things. So it's just a matter of getting it done now. And I expect them to play better offensively on Sunday for sure.
All right, Sammy Watkins is a no-go. How is it that a guy is, like, good enough to give it a go and then get green-lighted, and now it's so bad that he's out the next week? I mean, this is a recurring theme with him. I pointed out there have been three games they've had him active since he came to Kansas City, and he's only played in about 15 games total. There have been three games he's been out of those 15, three of them, he played 12 snaps or less, including last week's two snaps and out. Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, I was watching him during the early warm-ups. You know, some guys come out 2 or 3 hours before the game go through some workouts, and I was watching him the other day before the Colts game, and he was with Rick Burkholder, their trainer, and one of their conditioning guys, and you know, they were obviously keeping an eye on him, and then they left him alone, so it was pretty obvious that you know, they thought he was going to play, but he just somehow didn't look right to me. There just looked like there was a little bit too much concern on his part for what was going on out there, and sure enough, he played one or two plays, and he was done for the day. So, you know, it's one of those things where that's what you kind of get with him, you know, and the Chiefs are learning that now, or if they didn't know that already. So, you know, I can't imagine he's going to play this week, and we'll see how long it is before he does get back.
9 for 198 and 3 touchdowns in that first game. All right, 9 for 198 and 3 touchdowns in the first game. In the next four, he's 14 for 167 and zero. There's no way that they're going to carry a $21 million tag on him, cap number on him next year, is there?
No, I mean, you know, everybody talks about how the Chiefs drafted Mecole Hardman this year as insurance for Tyreek Hill, and yeah, there's some truth to that, but also I think they're planning for next year. You know, that they plan ahead for these kinds of things, and knew they were going to need a wide receiver to go along with Tyreek Hill, and knew this was going to be a possibility with Watkins. So no, I don't see it either at this point. Those games like the one he had in Jacksonville are few and far between with him.
Didn't have as many screens, no real bubble screens. Did they just become enamored with the deep ball and maybe get stung by it, that the Colt game was the wake-up call that, yes, they want to run the ball better. I'm still not, sold that they needed to run the ball more than they did. I know they only ran the ball, 11 times. I'll say they needed to run it more. I'll go they need to run it more. But, like, we say more, not 30 times, right? They're at 11. I think it needed to be, 14 or 15, because they weren't going anywhere when they ran the ball. That's the other part of the equation. But they didn't seem to supplement that with screens, and other than the one that LeSean McCoy fumbled on, and the bubble screens and the short passing game. Did they just get a little cocky and get stung, and now maybe they got the wake-up call to mix not only run and pass, but also deep and short pass?
Well, yeah, maybe, but I would like to see him stick with the running game a little more than they did the other day. It wasn't working, but pretty small sample size. I think that's a way to take pressure off a quarterback who may be hurting a little bit or at least isn't right. Take a pressure off a passing game that's missing both starting wide receivers, take pressure off a passing game that's having trouble blocking for the quarterback. I just think the Chiefs kind of got away from it too early the other day. And, you felt like the way they were operating offensively, you're right, they were going downfield a lot. You felt the way they were operating, they were down by like 30 points or something and needed to score quickly. I don't know what the rush was the other day. I really had a problem with a lot the Chiefs were doing offensively. And I think, the running game is something that can help them out. And it's just a weird game from a lot of aspects. I mean, LeSean McCoy hardly played, and Andy Reid kind of said the other day when I asked him about it that he said, he's having some protection issues. He's having trouble figuring out what he needs to do there, and we'll get him squared away with that. Let's get him squared away this week because they're probably most potent when he's in their backfield, and I like to see him get the ball. To have a game where he doesn't get a carry at all, that's a mistake. I mean, that's just flat out a mistake on the Chiefs' part, and they need to fix that.
All right, run defense. You got any optimism that's going to be better this week?
No, I don't. I really don't. I mean, I'll believe that now when I see it. I mean, that's been such a problem for them, and the tackling has been. I'll argue with Steve Spagnuolo. I asked him about this yesterday. I do think their tackling was better for the first couple games of the year than it's been since then, and it's been a big problem for them. So I don't know what the answer is there. I really don't. I mean, it's hard to see it getting better immediately with Xavier Williams out and Chris Jones out, and now Colin Saunders is going to have to play, and I don't know where Hitchens is. I mean, it's not a good mix right now, and it's a tough thing to figure out when you've got so many bodies gone. But that's what they're charged with.
Yeah. No, it's they got to get something done. All right, let's get to our final four, Adam. It's brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. I'll start you with this: who wins the game? What are you picking?
I got the Chiefs 31-30. But I tell you, obviously, by a one-point win, I'm not real confident. Early in the year, I think it was after the Jacksonville game, I started going through the Chiefs' schedule game by game. When are they going to lose? And I really didn't think there was much of a chance of it until this game right here. I think this is a game that presents them some problems with all that. Houston hung 53 points on Atlanta last week. They can score with the Chiefs. So now the Chiefs are all beat up. So who knows how this one's going to end? But I think the Chiefs are going to have to. Houston can score with them. So if this turns into a scoring war, normally you feel good about the Chiefs' chances to win those games. But this one, I'm not so sure. So we'll see what happens. But I like the Chiefs, but very close, and wouldn't surprise me to see it go the other way.
All right, real quick here. We got about 45 seconds for the last three. Who finishes second in the AFC West?
I'll take the leader in the clubhouse. I'll go with the Raiders.
Oh, wow. Okay. Who leads the Chiefs in touchdowns this year? Who will at the end of the year?
I'm going to go with LeSean McCoy.
Okay. And finally, is Eric Berry working for the Chiefs next year?
Interesting question. If the spirit moves him, yes, he will be working for the Chiefs.
So you don't think he's going to get hired away. All right. Adam, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Good stuff, sir. And talk to you later.
All right. Adam Teicher. He's fantastic covering the Kansas City Chiefs for us here in the program. You hear him all across the radio station. We will take a break. Come back. You hear the great Kevin Harlan next.